everyone, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now. My name is Jay Izzo, and live from the Linda Crafted Team Studios in here in Raleigh, North Carolina, part of the Research Triangle Park, we are talking about real estate matters that matter to you. And today's subject, oh, this is a fun one. We're going to be talking about real estate as an investment. Oh, right? All the time, you know, we hear regularly that people want to go, you know, can you invest in real estate? Is it a good investment? Should I do it? How do you do it? What do you need to think about when it comes to real estate investment? Well, I have three experts joining us today who are going to talk about real estate investing. And my first guest to my right is in fact, Steve Krueger with Linda Crafted Team Realtors. And Steve, introduce yourself, tell people how long you've been doing real estate, and talk about your investment experience.
Well, thank you, Jay. I have been in real estate for a little over 15 years at this point. I got into real estate really because my family was involved in the investment side of things. So it was something that interested me and ended up leading to a career in this. So I got my license. I can always gauge it by how old my kids are. So my son is 16, so it's almost been 16 years, actually. I got my license, moved here to North Carolina, and started working as a real estate broker.
Awesome. Okay, well, so let's talk about real estate as an investment here. And I know that there's people who have a lot of questions in terms of, you know, about investing in real estate. So let's talk about property types for investment. What type of property types might people be investing in?
So primarily it's going to come down to, you can invest in commercial or residential real estate. My expertise is residential, and I think most people, when they think about investing in real estate, they think about residential. It's something easily accessible for everybody, really. So primarily you're looking at investing in homes, whether that's a single family detached home or a condo or a townhome, or you can even get into multifamily homes. So you could own a duplex, a quadruplex, apartment building.
So when somebody's first time real estate investor, right, is typically the first thing that you generally see is that they're going to invest in a home that they're going to have, like they're going to use as a rental. Is that what you typically see? Or, I mean, what is the intro? I guess what is the introduction? I mean, like, what's the intro investment?
That's a good question. I would think that for most people, it is probably getting into a rental property. Mm-hmm. Though flipping houses over the last 20 years has become extremely popular thanks to HGTV right. And television shows that are about flipping houses. Right, it's kind of that dream of I can buy something that's cheap and do this, and all of a sudden it's worth all this extra money, right, and I can make that money fast. So, and flipping houses is something that a beginner could get into, and not with too much cash. The more cash you have, the better off you probably are, right, but right. It is something, both rental properties and flipping houses can be done with a loan, so you can leverage the investment.
Well, let's talk about the flipping houses thing. I wasn't planning on asking this question, but now that you brought it up, I think we should ask it.
Sure.
I mean, I have to assume that not every area is the same when it comes to flipping houses. I mean, it doesn't work everywhere, does it? Or, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it can work in any market.
I would think it can work in any market. It can certainly work in any market. Here in the Triangle, there are areas that could potentially be better than others, but I've noticed in looking for properties for investors I work with that flip houses that there are areas I would not have thought were that great for real estate not that long ago that are on kind of the periphery of the Triangle that are looking pretty attractive right now to flip a house because they're more affordable at the end of the day. But yeah, the concept of buying it sort of at a reduced value because it needs to be fixed up, fixing it up and selling it at a higher price, I would think can work pretty much everywhere.
I'm guessing though, like when you look at investing in real estate or doing that type of thing, we traditionally think more of I'm investing as a rental, right? That's probably more the traditional standpoint. So when you think about that, I mean, and somebody says to you, hey, you know, I want to buy a house through you, and right, I'm looking at to do it as a rental. I mean, how do you advise them?
So there's several things. The most important thing for a rental property, and I won't get too deep into this because I know your next guest is going to touch base on it in quite some detail. So the cap rate is a number that you look at that is essentially going to tell you how profitable that investment is. It's based on what's the acquisition price versus the income it's going to produce. So what you do is you identify a property, and then you are going to, and this is what I do as a broker when I have somebody that wants to buy a rental property, is I'm going to identify that property. Hey, this is a $275,000 home. And if you buy it for $275,000, I do a rent analysis, and I go, you know, it might rent for $2,200 a month or whatever that comes out to. Right. And then you just basically, determine, you know, what that cap rate is going to be based on that income versus the acquisition price. So that's going to be preliminarily the most important decision, because you know, how much return you can get on your investment is what we're all looking at.
So then does I guess property type is less relevant then of what type of property it is versus
yes and no.
Okay.
Because a townhome or a condo will tend to have higher HOA dues. And so that's cutting into your income. Now, at the same time, those higher HOA dues can save you money from not having to replace a roof and things like that. So there's some offsets there. But traditionally, a standalone home appreciates at a higher level than townhomes and condos. Mm. It's not going to be true everywhere, but it's a basic rule of thumb. And they're going to have lower HOA dues, maybe no HOA dues. Now, granted, you're going to be responsible for the maintenance of some things that condos and townhomes you wouldn't, but often you can find that the standalone home is quite possibly more profitable in the long run than the townhome or the condo.
So let's talk about a piece that you just mentioned here about, you know, if you have a home that you're going to rent, a single family home that you're going to be renting,
right?
And even if you have a townhome or condo, because you're still responsible for the inside of it, right? I mean, how do you calculate in your head, you know, because you're gonna, I mean, you have a renter,
right?
Let's say you have a renter for a year and they move on. I mean, there's going to be some cost involved. So I mean, do you have to get them to consider that when it comes to purchasing a property?
Definitely. And you want to keep all that in mind again when we're trying to forecast. Here's the yearly income. Your income is taking that rent but deducting your costs. And so you have to estimate, what are my annual costs going to be? Mm. And so some of that, if you're looking at, I want to own this property for 30 years, and I'm estimating out my costs over those 30 years, how old's the roof? How old's the HVAC? Mm. You know, if those things are almost new, then you got a long time till you got to replace those. If they're already getting up there in age, you're already planning on replacing those things here in the not too distant future. And then, of course, every time a tenant moves out, you've probably got some expenses. Often you might have to replace carpet, refinish hardwood floors, paint. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully you don't have to do that every time someone moves out.
Right.
And ideally you'd like someone that just stays in for a really long time.
Right.
Which is also, there are benefits to buying certain types of rental properties based on the demographics, income-wise, of the tenants that tend to stay in those properties for a really long time, because that reduces your costs over time. So that's another facet that you look at.
I guess the point is here, I guess for the listener, is it's not like you're going to purchase a single-family home or condo or townhouse as your first investment, and you're just going to be pocketing money right away.
Probably not, unless you've found some phenomenal deal, which is not very likely, especially the way the real estate market's been the last couple of years. But you very well might not be cash flowing even at all in the beginning. Mm. You might, and that's going to depend on how much you're financing too, right?
Right.
The more cash you put down, you'd be cash flowing a lot quicker or immediately. But you could get into a property with 20% down, and then if that's what you put in it, your cash flow might not be that high in the beginning, but over time, rent rates increase the same way everything else does. And so you start down the road cash flowing above what your average costs are going to be.
All right. So let's say we get our purchase our rental property. Let's talk about leasing contracts, because not all of them are the same, are they?
No, and in some ways they can be pretty similar. Here, I know any I've ever been involved with here in North Carolina, it's a standard form that everybody tends to use. But of course, you can insert all kinds of language and things. So there's, and they're certainly written to protect both sides. So you've got sort of a standardized form, but then people add in addenda and everything else. Also, when you start talking about rentals, you can have different types of rental properties. You can have your normal kind of long-term rental where somebody signs a lease for at least a year, or you could have a vacation property that you're renting out a week at a time, or 2 days at a time, or whatever. You know, you could have an Airbnb. You could have a property at the beach. That's a completely different type of rental agreement than you have, obviously, with a house that is a one-year lease. And then, you know, the ones that have the, well, this would be true even with vacation properties, I guess, but you're going to have clauses about pet ownership, you know, all kinds of stuff. So
these are decisions to, and, you know, when I, the more I hear about it, it's like, it's just not as simple as like, okay, I'm going to buy a single family home or a condo or a townhouse, and I'm just going to rent it.
Right.
And I'm free and clear. I don't have to worry about anything. In fact, there's a lot of thought process that people have to put into this prior to.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, so is this something like they should consult you? I mean, is this something that you go through when you're helping people purchase a rental property that you're walking them through? Have you considered all these things?
Yes. So if I'm talking to somebody and they want to buy a rental property, I'm analyzing, like I said, what the expected income could be, should be, kind of figuring out what you should just estimate, and it's a very loose estimate. You don't know all that's going to happen to a house over time, but just how much to kind of plan per year to spend maintaining that house, even vacancy rate, right? Your tenant moves out. It's not like you usually have someone moving in paying you rent the very next day.
Right.
So you might have a month without anybody paying you rent. So you've got to factor all those things in. So I definitely, in the beginning, I'm analyzing all that, giving you a good idea on your investment. And then I'm a numbers guy, so I'm looking at how much income is this going to create over time. And that's not just the income that's cash flow from the rent, especially as that rent increases, but also, and it's what makes investing in real estate so good, is you're also going to be appreciating every year.
Right.
So now, obviously we had a housing crisis where homes didn't appreciate, but traditionally they have appreciated over time. And if you look at what the real estate market did the last 2 years, I think a lot of that was a correction from the housing crisis, where all that pent-up value was always kind of there and had been lost and then exploded. So over time, you're always seeing appreciation in that asset as well as the income you're earning from the rent.
I love that. Okay, so what about, let's talk about reselling an investment property. So what is it when it, because, you know, you have a lot of people go, okay, I'm going to resell this thing. It's been X number of years, or maybe they're nervous about staying in it because they're just, you know, worried about market conditions, whatever. What type of things should people consider when they're reselling their investment property?
So when they're going to resell, the biggest thing is taxes. And taxes are what make real estate investment a very good thing. Not necessarily flipping houses. Flipping houses, the tax burden would be a detractor. You just have to factor it into your profit because you're going to pay capital gains tax. But on a rental property, you can take tax deductions for your, if you are financing that house, you can take tax deductions on the mortgage, you can take tax deductions on the improvements you make to the house, that sort of thing. So there are tax benefits to owning a rental property. When you go to sell any of these properties, that's when you've got to pay taxes.
Right.
Unless, now if you have a rental property and as long as you at some point move into it and live in it, I believe it's two of the last 5 years, then you wouldn't have to pay capital gains if it all of a sudden was your personal residence, and then you can sell it. But for the most part, people, when they sell their rental property, are going to have to pay capital gains tax. But that's where the tax code can benefit you as well, because we have what's called a 1031 exchange, where you could take that property, sell it, put that money into another real estate investment, and keep doing that over time and deferring those tax payments for many years while building wealth. So the reason real estate is so attractive is use the tax code to your advantage to make a lot of money over your lifetime.
Okay, so basically we're just rolling the money into the next investment, into the next investment, into the next investment. And, you know, hopefully what we're doing, we're just increasing, increasing, increasing that. And then at some point, you know, if we decide, okay, I'm done with this, we're just, you're going to have to take the hit, or you're going to have to roll it over into some, I mean, can you roll it over to another investment, or are you just going to have to take the hit on the taxes?
At some point, you're going to take the hit on the taxes. You could, you know, keep it in the family, and and then they just defer, you know, I mean, at some point we all die, and then your kids could just keep doing 1031 exchanges. So you could avoid the taxes for generations if you really wanted to.
That's awesome. Steve, you've been great. Tell people how they can get a hold of you.
You can reach me at 919-740-9795. That is my cell phone number. I'll say it again, 919-740-9795. You can also email me, steve@lindacraft.com.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Steve. Great to see you.
You're welcome. I want to add one more point.
Sure.
Inflation is on everyone's mind.
Right.
Excuse me. One of the great benefits of investing in real estate is it's a hedge against inflation, because housing prices and rent tend to increase when we are in an inflationary market. So if you want to put your money in the right place with high inflation, real estate's a great place to do it.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. So send him on in. We'll be talking. So great information, right? By the way, thanks, Paul Fitz, for chiming in here. Paul's a lender, by the way, and who's been on the show. He says, keeping your first home, then buying another one is a great way to begin your rental portfolio. And that's why, and thanks, Paul, for doing that for us. I'm here with Tony Fink with Linda Crafted Team Realtors. And Tony is, you have the beautiful.
I'm a Renaissance man, Jay.
Yeah, you are a Renaissance
man. And I wore my fun shirt today. I got that. Hawaiian flowers on it to match yours.
I know, my little paisley color. I want to just talk about your experience, because before the show started, of course, our next guest, who's going to be following you, Scott McElzey.
Finance guru.
Yeah. But you were dealing with huge investments.
I was. So I was very fortunate. I've always been involved in real estate. And when I graduated from a small university in the Midwest with an English degree, of course, I went into finance. Never taken a business class. Got into commercial real estate. So I started off doing some more small development deals, small shopping centers. But prior to joining this firm, I actually was doing a lot of large lending across the country on office buildings, malls, very large developments. And very fortunate.
And that's a way different investment portfolio than the typical person who's, you know, getting into investing, or an individual who's starting out. I mean, they're probably not going to be buying a mall.
Yeah, it's not something the average person will be doing. I mean, most of my clients were life insurance companies, sovereign wealth funds, endowments for universities. But the dynamics that work for those, other than the size of the transaction, are very much the same dynamics that an individual investor could use.
Oh, so let's talk about some of those dynamics. What are some of the shared dynamics that you see there?
Well, the first thing I would say is understand why you're getting into real estate in the first place. If you're buying real estate for investment purposes, make sure you understand what those investment purposes are. Think them through, really vet it. Because one of the challenges with real estate, commercial real estate, houses too, though, unfortunately, is they typically require cash at the worst possible time. So you got to have a pool of cash set aside.
Right.
Because as your prior guest Steve was mentioning, if a tenant moves out, you got downtime. You can't call the bank up and say, hey, you know, my tenant moved out. You know, can I just pay it in 3 months?
Right.
Doesn't usually work that way.
Right.
But on metrics, there's some basic metrics. And I know there's one you want to talk about.
Yeah.
It's affectionately referred to as the cap rate.
Yeah, this thing about cap rates, I think it can get, you know, it gets thrown around a lot.
It does.
Because people like to evaluate. I know, like, when it comes to investing in real estate, people want to know, oh, what's the cap rate? Right. I hear that. I'll be on a plane somewhere, right? And I'll hear two people talking about investments, and they'll go, so what's the cap rate, right? And I'm like, and people are like going, you know, their eyes are open. They're looking for, okay, what is that? But what is a cap rate? Help people understand what
I'm
that
glad you asked, because I wrote it down so I don't forget.
You've been doing this forever.
And we'll keep it high level, though. Okay, okay. But a cap rate really is a way to look at your projected cash on cash return for the first year of ownership.
Cash on cash return and first year of ownership.
So a cap rate typically assumes, and this is just theory, assumes you're buying the property all cash.
Okay.
And then you're doing a projection of what's my rent going to be? What's my top line revenue going to be? So if you're a business owner, it's your top line revenue. Of course, from revenue, you got to subtract expenses. Mm-hmm. Since it's a all cash investment, the theory, you don't have debt associated with it.
Okay.
So you take essentially your gross income minus your vacancy factor, minus your credit loss factor, which if one of your tenants doesn't pay rent, you have to pursue them, minus your operating expenses, and divide that by your purchase price. And that spits out a cap rate. It's actually called capitalization rate.
Okay. And, okay, go ahead.
Well, so great, Tony. Great. Thanks for explaining it. What do I do with that?
Yeah, what do I do with that information?
Well, what I say is, if you have a pool of cash to invest, first thing, what is that cash earning for you risk-free? Because real estate is not risk-free.
Okay.
So what's my return on my cash sitting in a bank account? Well, in today's world, not very high.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay. Much. Am I ready to roll up the sleeves, Jay, and be a property owner?
Okay.
Well, before I make that decision, what if I just put it in a very safe utility stock? Mm. Or what if I put it in a CD or a municipal bond or a treasury bond? Mm. What are those returns? And then you look at, okay, well, those are boring. Right. I can't go to a cocktail party and say, hey, Jay, I just bought the 2-year yield, buddy. It's not as exciting, right?
No, it's just that.
I just bought an office building downtown.
That's huge.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay.
So that's really where you start to look at it. And I did bring a sheet, and it won't show on the screen, but
I'll hold it up.
There's a camera. This shows you.
Here, no, go ahead. Just hold up there. Get up there.
Right, there we go.
There it is, if you can see it. Yeah.
What this screen is, and I borrowed it from one of the largest.
I'll do it like this. That way you can talk about it.
Yeah, I borrowed it from one of the largest real estate investors in the country, which invests on their own behalf and other people. It's called cap rates. And what it's showing you there is the risk spread between the cap rate for different property types, the main four property types, and compares it to the 10-year treasury, which today was about 2.9% before we went on air. So if you look at apartments, the cap rate is 4.65.
Okay.
So the spread or the risk premium for the risk associated with owning real estate, which is a complicated risk, is on apartments, it's about 1.75%.
So that's what your expected return is.
That's the risk premium, why I should get into buying an apartment building versus just buying a 10-year treasury.
Which, and so by comparison, we're saying then I should go ahead and do the...
Well, that's where you get to make the decision, right? Is that enough return for you to take the risk? Because I could say, Jay, I know you got $100 million hanging around.
Oh, yeah.
We could go buy an apartment building. We're going to get, I don't know, 175 over the 10-year. Mm-hmm. But hey, Jay, why don't we go buy an office building, a multi-tenant office building with a great lobby and lots of staff maintaining the property? Well, on that one, we're going to get a 260 spread.
Ooh.
Sounds better.
Ooh. That's almost a whole percent.
I know. But wouldn't that imply there's a little more risk associated with that office building?
Oh, yeah.
If I'm going to get a better return, there's no free lunch in life. So if I'm getting a better return, I'm usually accepting risk. And again, I'm not trying to get too complicated. Your answer was, hey, if I can get that type of return, shouldn't I go buy it?
Right.
All depends on your risk parameters. So if you buy apartment buildings, you have to understand, or an apartment complex or a duplex, which a lot of people buy, you just have to underwrite or anticipate in your pro formas, your projections, tenants rolling over, downtime, maintenance, redoing the carpeting, redoing the paint. If you're talking about an office building, it's that on steroids. You know, the elevator's got to be serviced. Mm-hmm. You got to do all the permitting. You got to have the annual inspections.
Right.
If you go to self-storage facilities, which actually are very popular profile. They have a much lower turnover expense. So as you and I empty out our storage unit, or if we don't pay the bill and they sell it on Storage Wars or whatever, you know, it's pretty easy to put a new tenant in.
Right.
So I hope that helps a little bit.
I've always been fascinated by storage facilities as an investment. That's always fascinated me.
Well, so right now, three of the top investment profiles from the standpoint of investor appetite. So the more appetite,
right,
the lower those yields are going to be, the lower that cap rate's going to be. So if you're at a dinner and someone says, hey, Jay, I just bought it a 1 cap. You want to mess with them, just say, I just bought it a 10 cap. You just made a much better investment on a price basis than they did, because you're getting a 10% return and they're getting a 1% return.
Right, 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 right.
So that means in 10 years, you get all your money back.
Right.
And I don't know what one is, but probably 100 years.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's one of the ways to use that cap rate. It's a very superficial way or metric to evaluate whether or not you want to pursue a particular property for investment, or a property class, apartments versus office buildings versus industrial versus self-storage.
So I'm going to ask a question that's probably doesn't make any sense, but I mean, is there, I'm assuming that investors are, do they look specifically at a cap rate, or are they looking at the risk, or are they looking, I mean, when they make their decisions, you know, are you, I mean, are some, or is it you talk about risk profile, but then I'm thinking, well, okay, how much more of a risk is it if I want a higher cap rate? Is it a lot more risk?
Yeah, so let me think that through with you. It's going to depend on the sophistication level of the investor.
Okay.
First. And that's not a judgmental question, but those sovereign wealth funds, those large insurance companies, those publicly traded real estate investment trusts, right, REITs, those guys are PhD levels.
Okay.
If you talk about me and you getting together, we're more like kindergarten level, right? So it depends on the scale of reference,
right,
on how you look at it, but the metrics all work together.
Okay.
So if I'm getting a higher cap rate, am I making a better investment? Yes, if. Okay. And the if is if the projections prove out.
Oh, because right, it's
because I got a 10% return versus a 5%.
Right, because it's still a risk. We don't know if it's going to prove itself out. But based on what we know to this is what we're guessing.
Correct.
So it's just really, we're just really guessing at this point. So how do? Oh man.
So the super sophisticated investors,
right,
they're going to do a cash flow model, and they're going to project out incomes for 10 years typically.
Okay.
And they're going to use a cap rate, your friend.
Right.
They're also going to use a terminal cap rate. What's a terminal cap rate?
Right. What's a terminal?
Terminal cap rate is the cap rate upon sale at the end of your analysis. And if you go in at a 5, you're probably using a 6.5 or 7 in the future. Okay, because money is worth less tomorrow than it is today, typically.
Right.
Is that fun word with the I? It's called something.
Yeah, inflation.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So that's one of the things to think about.
So let's take the first-time investor
here,
and let's talk about this first-time investor. When they're coming in, and you're talking a new language to them, the cap rate language, because I'm sure a brand new investor is not a language that they're going to.
They may have a superficial understanding of it. Again, no judgment in that choice of adjective, but I'm going to sit through with them first and say, let's talk through your motivations, and let's talk through what your experience level has been. Since you're a first time or a new investor in real estate, I'm going to take the time to go through where all the pitfalls in real estate are, because it's no different than when you go to a cocktail party, right? You go to a cocktail party, the stock market's doing great. Everyone tells you about all their winners. if they never tell you about their losers, you always want to look askant at their information, right?
Right, right, right.
Because anyone who does this type of investing on a routine basis is going to have winners and losers.
Right.
So I talk through their risk appetite first. Make sure they understand the risk associated with the type of property. One of the biggest mistakes I find a lot of investors, especially new investors in real estate, make is they fail to understand what a vacancy factor is. Mm-hmm. And what happens when a tenant moves out. And they'll typically say, oh, well, I'll just rent it. Well, it's going to be 30 days. It might be 60 days. Mm-hmm. So if you have two of your 12 months without revenue, that's a pretty big loss of revenue.
Right.
So you need to underwrite all that in. Now, hopefully, if you're correct and you made the right investment decision with a professional advising you, you can take that extra cash because you're still going to have it.
Right.
And you set it aside in a bank account for that rainy day.
Right.
The other challenge with real estate on the commercial side is the debt structure that you're able to get if you are using a loan to support the purchase is usually not 30 years and fixed.
Okay.
Usually it's going to be 3 years or 5 years, maybe seven, maybe 10 if you're lucky.
Okay,
for commercial properties. So commercial real estate, like any, is a cyclical investment cycle, repetitive. When the loan comes due, you need to go find a new loan, and you have to underwrite that risk and do it as well.
So, how do you keep it simple then for a first-time investor?
I love that question, Jay. So first-time investor, I want to buy real estate.
Right.
Awesome. Have you maxed out your home first? Have you bought as much home as you want and need first? Answer is yes. Great. Do you have a vacation property that you might be able to do it as a rental? No. That would be my recommendation for the next step. But I don't want a vacation property. I don't take vacations. Awesome. Understand it. Let's find a house within a 5-mile radius of your home, and let's look at buying one of those. And then we'll do the model together. And by the way, are you going to be answering the call, Jay, at 3 a.m. when the toilet's overflowing?
Interesting.
Or are you going to hire that out?
Right.
Because when you hire that out, that's 10% off the top. Ooh. So remember, we talked vacancy factor.
Right.
2 months out of 12.
Right.
And I got to pay 10% off the top.
Right.
To somebody else to manage the property, evaluate tenants, negotiate the lease. All of a sudden, you get a lot of leakage in revenue.
Right.
So
wow.
That's the way I'd usually handle it with folks that aren't as experienced,
right.
Who have the capital, who have the risk tolerance. House first, vacation property, no vacation property, rental properties close by. If you're young or if you're not young and you have the chance to buy a duplex, you live in the side and rent out of the side, that's an awesome way to invest in real estate.
I love that. That's awesome. You know what? You know, every time you come on the show, I mean, it's like your brilliance just shows up every single time.
Wow, come on. You're just so smart.
We didn't talk DCF.
We didn't talk reversionary rates. We haven't talked per square foot. So, I mean, we can get really complicated.
This is the thing about investing in real estate, though, that I think it's just not a simple thing. I'm just buying a second house and I'm going to rent it. There is a lot of information that you just need to know. Or you should know, or you need somebody experienced like you who can walk you through it, or Steve, you know, that says, okay, listen, you need to think about this.
Well, absolutely. And the advice I just gave you on how to think about it, if you're an individual like me who wants to get into investing as a real estate, it doesn't matter what geography you're in. It could be my friends down in the 305 in Miami. It could be my friends in the 617 in Boston. Right. It's all kind of the same. But what you really have to do is, with any investment, you want to take emotion out of it. It's very cool to be excited about something. It's great to be emotional about it. Right. But before you write those checks, sit down and take the emotion out and say, what could go wrong?
Oh yeah.
What am I not thinking about?
Right.
Because as much as I love real estate and the fortunes I've seen families, individuals, and companies make in real estate is truly astounding, I can also tell you equal stories of evaporation of wealth,
right?
Because the tenant filed bankruptcy.
Right.
The loan matured in 2008 and nobody would make me a loan. And then all of a sudden all your wealth can disappear.
Right.
So it's like anything else in investing. You don't put all your eggs in one basket.
That's awesome. Tony, you were great. Tell people how to get a hold of you.
Well, you can reach me at lindacraft.com. That would be Tony at lindacraft.com. Or you can hit me up on social media. And I'm still waiting for all those folks from last week or 2 weeks ago to hit me up on the Think Funny, because that is rocking it.
Every Wednesday.
Or 919-986-4146. And Jay, I know our next guest.
Right.
We'll talk about debt. And one of the cool things hopefully you can talk to him about is, okay, Tony talked about this hypothetical thing called a cap rate. How do I improve my yields, my returns, the money in my pocket by using debt? Debt can be your friend as long as you understand how it works. And then that whole analytic we did where we did income minus expenses divided by purchase price, you then do income minus expenses minus debt service divided by purchase price.
Oh, boy.
And leverage returns is where the secret sauce is in real estate.
Oh man, I'm excited.
And I'll leave it there, and hopefully I get an invite back, Jay.
Yes, you're gonna get an invite. You know you're going to get an invite back. That's Tony Fink with Linda Crafted Team Realtors, who is joining us, and our next guest is coming soon. His name is Scott McAlexander. Oh, folks, tune in, because this is gonna be the part of the show where we actually bring in a lender who works in the area of lending and in the area of investment and real estate. There's Scott McAlexander with Town Bank Mortgage. Scott, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So how long have you been in this real estate lending business? How long have you been doing this?
I've been a commercial banker for the past 22 years.
22 years. So you've seen, if not everything, most everything.
I've certainly seen some ups and downs. I made it through the Great Recession fairly well, but yes, I certainly have seen a lot.
So I know that for you, that you work with really more experienced investors. I'm going to just start with the early investor real quick. I know that's not somebody you typically work with, but somebody is an early investor. Because we all have to start somewhere. I mean,
sure.
we just don't jump in to going, hey, I'm calling Scott, because I'm ready to go get my big, apartment complex. I mean, right? I mean, nobody's doing that. Go, well, I just bought my first home. I'm ready to invest in real estate. I think I'm going to buy an apartment complex. And so I'm going to call Scott.
But I have those conversations weekly. I have two or three conversations every single week.
Really?
With somebody who's referred to me.
Okay.
My clients know somebody. A real estate agent I know knows somebody.
Right.
One of my clients, one of the mortgage brokers I work with, knows somebody, and they say, give Scott a call, he'll be able to help you out. So we have those conversations. I have them every single week, and I love them.
Right.
Because I get to sit down with somebody for half an hour, have a great conversation, and kind of go over the stuff that you guys are going over today.
Okay, so let's talk about moving from that first investment and going, now I'm going to become a little bit more experienced. When does that occur for most people? I mean, how does that happen? Because I'm sure people are going, okay, how do I get to you eventually where you're going to be my lender?
So you have the ability, and we didn't talk about lending with the first two guests, but most folks have the opportunity when they initially get into, whether it's buying a single family house or a duplex or even a quadplex, they can utilize a conventional mortgage. So think 30-year fixed rate. Think about, you're going to be judged based on you, not on the property itself. And you can generally lend, or you generally can borrow by 4, 5, 6, 7, even up to 10 houses if you qualify, by utilizing a conventional mortgage. Okay. And I would recommend to folks, especially in the beginning, first 4 or 5 houses, utilize a conventional mortgage. Develop a relationship with a mortgage banker. Develop a relationship with a real estate agent who can kind of help you and guide you through that process. Once you get those houses and you're taking the calls at 3 o'clock in the morning to fix a toilet, or you lose a tenant for 4 months and you lose all that income because they trashed the house and you had to replace all the flooring in it. Once you've kind of made it through that, you've kind of been through the first wars, and you decide, you know what, this is something I want to do and I want to take it to the next level. That's when you would come to somebody like me and you'd say, you know, I've kind of outgrown what I was doing. I've got 6 or 7 mortgages. I want to buy some more properties.
Right.
I get a fair amount of cash flow coming off these properties. And then you sit down with me and we kind of figure out, what can we do with the properties you own?
Okay.
Can we refinance them as a group? So instead of having 6 payments, you have 1. Mm. can we peel off a couple of those properties and put a line of credit in place for you secured by unencumbered properties and then refinance the remaining group? So maybe you come to me with six properties, we refinance three, we pay off all the debt you had on the six, and then we put a line of credit secured by the other three, and then you utilize that line of credit to go out and kind of grow your portfolio from there.
So what do you typically see when somebody is making that jump? You know, when they start, they've got the 10 properties.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a property, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to make this jump into an office. Maybe it's going to be an office building, or maybe it's going to be an apartment complex. What do you typically see that next jump being? Is there a typical?
Most of the folks I work with who started out in single family or one to four family, so okay. up to duplexes, their next move is, you know what, I've got these properties, they've really appreciated value, they were kind of on the edge of a downtown area, and now they're booming. I'm going to sell those, and as your last guest talked about or your prior guest talked about, they're going to do a 1031 exchange on the sale of those properties, and they're going to roll it into, you know, an 8-unit apartment building, a 10-unit apartment building, something like that. They generally don't go to office because they don't understand it. It's a different animal. You got longer term leases. You really need to get 5-year leases and not 1-year leases. It's just a different animal. It's more complicated. They generally kind of move along in that residential kind of vein.
Okay.
So they get bigger, or they may decide, you know what, I'm going to do something like a mobile home park.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So because your last guest talked about cap rates.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Cap rates also get higher, meaning you're going to get a better return.
Right.
If you're in an asset category that people really don't want to be in.
Right.
The big guys don't want to be in. The big guys don't want to be in Class C apartment, but the vacancy rate on Class C apartments are relatively low.
Okay.
So there's fewer people who are kind of playing that game.
Right.
So as you kind of move up through asset classes or kind of look at different asset classes, find ones where you're going to get a better return because there's fewer folks who are willing to invest in that type of asset.
Okay. Well, okay. All right. So now you're...
I know. Yeah, it won't get too complicated.
No, but I mean, you kind of opened up another can of worms here.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, because now I'm kind of like, I'm like trying to think and I'm like going, okay, hold it here. But I want to invest in an office building, but you're going, that's a little complicated, Jay, for somebody to get into because that's a whole different animal. So why is that such a different animal?
Your types of tenants are different. The expectations from those tenants are generally higher.
Okay.
Especially if you're in a Class B apartment or a Class B office.
Right.
There's more risk associated with office.
Okay.
Banks are a little bit more wary. They want to have, you know, most of the units leased with 5-year leases. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny associated with that asset class.
Okay.
We've gone through this pandemic where people are still working from home.
Right.
So the office is not a preferred asset class right now.
Right.
But it in the right place, meaning that you may find a good Class C apartment.
Right.
Where folks really need to be there, they need a space, or they need a flex space where they can store stuff. Mm-hmm. Those types of assets may make more sense for you.
Okay, I'm wondering here because you just brought in this whole thing about the pandemic, and I'm thinking, you know, people working from home now or the hybrid because there's a lot more vacancy rates than we had probably. I mean, or it's a little bit more difficult. So let's talk about the lending piece itself.
Yeah,
I mean. Lending on an investment property is just so much different. I mean, what do you look at in terms of, I mean, because, right, the interest rates are higher than what you would typically get on a home, right?
We're in a weird situation right now where actually mortgage rates are slightly higher than where commercial rates are.
Really?
It's weird. It's never been like that in my career.
Wow.
But we're at this kind of weird inflection point. I think we're going to see that reverse. That's going to change in the next... you know, 6 to 12 months, but we're right there right now.
So when you start lending money on investments, I mean, how do you look at a person's financial situation? I mean, is it similar to there's percentages that you look at income wise? Is it pretty much the same, or is it a little bit different? Are you looking at the asset class? here too? I mean, because I'm sure, you know, the more risk that you see, there's probably going to be a higher interest rate associated with that maybe, or am I guessing wrong?
I would advise folks, because there are going to be different types of folks listening to this call,
right, yeah,
or listen to this podcast. People get into investing in real estate generally for a longer period of time.
Okay.
And I would advise them that not to look at real estate investment as a way to quit your day job.
Okay.
So, some folks come to me and say,
right.
I hate my job.
Right.
So. And I want to own real estate.
Right. Okay.
And the most successful folks that I work with, even 20 years in,
right,
still have their day job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right, right.
Because I need your day job to cover your vacations. Your real estate portfolio should feed itself.
Right, okay.
Not your kids. So I need you doing what you've always done, which is continue to work hard at your job, you and your spouse, whatever that looks like. You're paying your mortgage, you're going on vacations, you're buying a boat, whatever you're doing.
Right.
And I don't need your real estate portfolio to be the cash flow that's supporting all that.
I gotcha.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
So that's one thing that I look at is kind of where are you personally with your cash flow and your assets? And, you know, kind of do you have your house in order personally? And then, and most of the time I can check that off because you've got great credit, you got money in the bank, you've got a 401k or an IRA.
Right.
Your balance sheet looks good.
Okay.
So when you come to me, that only lets me look at just the asset you're buying.
Right.
What's the asset? What's the risk? Kind of where's it located? How are you going to manage it?
Right.
What's the cash flow? And there's two main metrics that we're going to look at, it, which is, you know, what are you buying it for?
Mm.
And then that's going to kind of derive what is the cap rate? What is the capitalization rate? You know, is it a good deal? Does it make sense?
Okay.
And then kind of what's the upside on the, you know, 12 months, 24 months from now? What are you going to be able to do with this asset to improve it, make it better?
Mm.
Were the folks who were managing it previously just not doing a good job?
Gotcha.
And is there a situation for you to just make it better?
Yeah, tweak it.
Tweak it.
Yeah.
Or just totally renovate it.
Right.
Because we can help with that too. And then I want to know, so the loan to value, kind of how much do you need to borrow?
Right.
And that should work with what we calculate and work with, which is the debt service coverage ratio. So debt service coverage ratio, simple calculation, you figure out what's going to be left over after I pay taxes, insurance, a vacancy rate, the management company, the expenses that you've got if you pay cash for the building.
Okay.
So subtract those expenses. That gives you a net operating income. It gives you kind of, that's your cash flow that's available to pay the bank, and then hopefully put money in your pocket every single month.
Right.
Because I want two things from you. I want you to have cash. I want you to have equity in every piece of property you're buying. And I want at the end of every month for a check to go into your bank account.
Right.
Because those two things keep you engaged with that property long term.
Right.
If you don't have a lot of equity in the property and it goes south, you're more likely to walk away from it. If you're not making money on it, why do you even care?
Right.
So I want those two things, and a loan to value. So having the equity in, so our loan to value is at 75 or 80%, gets you that equity. And having a debt service coverage where you've got excess cash flow every single month. And we calculate that as we take, you know, what's your cash flow?
Right.
And then we, you know, divide that by the debt service, the principal and interest you're going to be paying the bank every single month. And that ratio should be in the 120 to 135 range, depending on the type of asset. And that means that, you know, if your rent's $1,000 a month, well, you should be putting about $250 in your pocket every single month after you pay the bank and pay all your bills.
Yeah, so don't quit your day job.
Exactly. So, but
because there's going to be, because you know, we're also not thinking about it. And Steve brought up a good point. There's going to be equity at the end of this when you decide to sell.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I look at it like a, you know, you look at it like a bond.
Mm-hmm.
You're buying it for a certain amount. You're going to get paid along the way,
right,
and then you're going to be able to sell it at the end.
Right.
I don't look so much at what it's going to be worth at the end. We hope the value is still going to be there.
Right. Right.
But I advise folks, don't buy a real estate asset because you think it's going to appreciate significantly.
Mm.
Buy a real estate asset based on what it's going to pay you every single month.
Right.
The appreciation is the gravy. it generally will appreciate over the long term.
Right.
So 15, 20 years, you're going to see some appreciation. But you could see the value dip a little bit.
Right.
And it could dip for a few years. During the Great Recession, kind of values dipped for 7 years, you know, in the local market I work in.
Right.
Values went down for 7 years, and it took 7 years for them to get back to par.
Right.
Well, that was not a good time to own a real estate, but if you had good cash flow, that didn't matter.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's something we got to talk about there, because I think people get confused on what cash flow really is, right? Because I don't think they understand the importance of it, because I think they focus on, you know, yields and, you know, equity return, but we don't really talk about the understanding the significance of cash flow. Just speak to that just a little bit.
I mean, it's the most important thing to the bank if you're going to borrow money is how are you going to repay this loan? Mm-hmm. And it's my secondary source of repayment is you.
Right, right.
Then my primary source of repayment is the asset.
The property itself, yeah.
Yes.
Right.
So that's really, really important to the entire equation. Mm. The amount of cash flow you're able to drive from the property compared to how much you're paying for it, that's the cap rates we just talked about. Right. If cap rates, if you're buying it and the cap rate's really, really low, that means you're going to have to put much more money into the project to make that loan to value debt service coverage calculation work.
Right.
And I have that conversation with folks all the time, because they come to me and say, I've got this property and it's worth all this money.
Right, right.
And I'm like, well, how much are you making every month on that property, or what's your rent? And they're like, well, it could be higher, but it's really low. And I'm like, well, I can lend on that asset for you, but your loan to value is going to be about 50%. I can only lend 50% of the value of that asset.
Of the value of the asset, right.
Yes. And one of the points I wanted to make was that for a lot of folks who get into real estate investing, and they own a group of properties over time, and some of those properties are really going to go up in value just because they picked the right property at the right time at the right place. You really need to reevaluate your portfolio over time, and there may be opportunities for you to sell that asset, recast the debt on your portfolio, and be in a much better shape to do exactly what we were talking about, which is move up to larger assets, better assets, different assets.
That makes complete sense. I mean, that's beautifully done too, by the way. You're just like so smooth with this. It's like you've done this before. Once or twice. I mean, it makes some sense. So how does real estate, I mean, based on your experience right now, as the market exists right now, how do you see real estate investments comparing to other investments? I mean, do you see them about the same? You see them, they're improving? Where are we at with that right now, you think? And I'm not going to hold you. Nobody's holding this to you, but I mean, because I think there's opportunity in there's opportunity in every market. It doesn't matter what the market is. It doesn't matter what inflation is.
Yeah.
There's always opportunity in every market. And I believe that's true. I'm just curious, because people are going to ask, well, you know, is real estate as good of investment as a treasury bond? Is it as good as, you know, investing in, you know, I mean, how do you see real estate investing right now as it exists?
I do think that there's a mismatch between in those cap rates that we were talking about.
Right.
There's a mismatch between what folks are asking for an asset and what it's deriving in income.
Okay.
And that there's a difference there.
Okay.
Because we've seen a really jump up in values over the past 36 months. I mean, it was going up, and then it really went up right after the pandemic, especially in residential, because people really invested in their homes. They wanted to stay and go bigger, and
interest
rates were low.
We gutted our house, and we did it. You know, right? We did because we're not going anywhere. We decided to invest in our own home and improve it the way we wanted it. Yeah,
exactly. Sure. And so single family is not animal, because single family has two purposes. Unlike an office building, has one purpose, which is somebody's going to go and work there.
Right.
Okay,
right.
A single family house or even a duplex, it can be used by an owner occupant, which considers that property to be much more valuable because they don't really care about any income associated with it. They just want to know, is that a good place for me to raise my family and live?
Right.
And it can also be a rental property.
Right.
We look at it, I look at it as a lender, and most investors look at it as, a rental property.
Right.
But they also come, those investors come back around to me and say, oh, but it's worth all this money because it's in a neighborhood and it's worth.
Right.
And I'm like, well, then sell it to somebody who's going to live in it, because they're going to pay you more for it than somebody's going to pay you for that property as an investor. They don't separate that in their mind. They think, well, this asset's worth all this money as an investment. No, it's worth all that money to somebody who's going to live in it.
Right.
As an investment, it's not worth that. You just happen to own an investment that has two purposes or two uses: rental property or an owner-occupant.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So they've got to separate that, because we get emotionally attached to real estate, and real estate is a thing. You talked about other assets.
Right.
I like real estate because you can go see it. You can walk around the neighborhood.
Right.
You can see what's going on up around it. You can see other stuff that's being built. You can, it's tangible.
Right.
And everybody I work with, that's what they love about it too. We always talk about, you know, my favorite days are the ones where I go do construction inspections, or I go drive around and look at real estate with folks and walk around an apartment building and go through units and kind of see what's going on.
You are awesome. I'm going to tell you, you were great. Tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Okay. I'm Scott McAlexander. My cell phone number is 919-757-5386. And I work for Town Bank. I'm on LinkedIn if you want to track me down there. Scott McAlexander at Town Bank. Scott only has one T.
Yeah.
And McAlexander is MC with an Alexander right behind it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for doing this for such short notice and doing that. I mean, you were fantastic. I'm just sitting here blown away. I'm like, why haven't we talked about this stuff before? Because it's so good. Thank you, Scott. Hey, folks, that's the show. Listen, you know what I say to you every week? Well, first of all, thank you for being with us, because you know what? I know you have a lot of choices and you chose to watch Real Estate Right Now. I can't be more grateful. Listen, tell your friends, give us a positive rating. We're always, always looking for you. And if you got a question, listen, every week we do this show, so please feel free to ask your questions. The professionals will get back with you, like professionals like Scott. So listen, until next week, you know what I say to you everywhere all over the world who watches and listens to the show. Ciao, everybody.